You understand what I mean, don't you?
I think I do.
And so, at that time, the entire 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade people were in the same room.
Whenever you had an assembly, is that right, or a study hall?
Whenever you had, whenever you were not in a class, you returned to that room and sat there.
I see.
And at the beginning of every morning, there were opening exercises. And every person in the high school had to get up on the platform twice a year and make a speech as part of their morning exercises. And in front of the teacher's desk were two rows of benches where the class that was going to meet in the assembly room with that particular teacher, who was the principal, we called him Tippy. His name was T.P. Bauer, B-A-U-E-R, principal of the high school. And everybody called him Tippy, T-I-P-P-Y, mm-hmm. Tippy Bauer. And maybe not to his face, I don't know.
Did you call him professor or mister?
Called him professor, I think.
Yeah, I noticed most of the principals were listed as professor, so Professor Stewart.
Professor Bauer, professor. Mm-hmm. And he had a German class there, and I took German 2 years in high school, so sat in those front seats for 2 years during the time of the German class. Now, to the south of this assembly room, on the, did I mention that on the east side was the history teacher's room?
Yes.
I think I've already mentioned that.
Yes.
On the other side, you went into a door, and that was the English teacher's room.
About how many would be in a room, say a room, about how large would your classes be?
Well, they would vary very much. If we had a class with nobody but seniors in that year, there'd only be 18 in it, but most classes, they wouldn't all be seniors in the class. If there would be an English class, it might be such a, you might be taking English 10 or English 11 or English something else, don't you know? But the classes varied. There were probably about 30 or 40 in a class. And oftentimes, I imagine, there was a regular recitation room, and it was pretty full usually. I'm not sure how many there were, but subclasses were quite small, depending on the subject that was being discussed.
Yes.
Then, on the, you got out of the room through two doors. The doors weren't very far apart, but the hallway extended the north door, the hallway extended to the north, clear to the edge of the recitation room. It was over there in that corner. There was a recitation room also in that corner. And then at the south door, there was this hall and the stairway, you see, and a place to hang rafts. There were hooks, a row of hooks along the wall, along two walls, and you hang your coats and hats or whatever you had on a hook. And then you went down the stairs, and there was the open place downstairs where the stairway came down, and then there was a door leading over to back of that. There was a narrow hall that went down clear to the edge, to the east edge of the building, and that had hooks on both sides of it where you could, all those that were on the, on that side of the building, on the south side of the building, were the fifth and sixth grades in two rooms. And on the north side were the seventh and eighth grades in two rooms. And then in front, on the south side, was the superintendent's office. And in those days, the superintendent was the one that saw that if you went to the superintendent, you probably found that he had a nice wide strap and that he knew how to use it. And even the most hardened boys would come back with tears in their eyes after they'd visited the superintendent, so that it was indication to other boys that they better be more careful.
Well, how long would you say that this kind of punishment was used? Long after you taught, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
I remember it in my school days even.
When I was teaching, it got to the point where you could still slap a child, but you had to go immediately and report it to the principal.
And so the high school was really, the classrooms were on the second floor.
The high school classrooms were on the second floor. But if you took science, all the laboratories were upstairs in the old Union School. And so, in all kinds of weather, you had to run from the high school over to the Union School, to the steps nearest to the west side of the building, go up the winding stairs, and into the room. And we had a teacher whose name was Kennedy. And when we would come over to the science class, he'd be looking down from his perch at the head of the railing at the top of the stairs, could see us when we started at the bottom of this winding stairs, and so we all called him Peeker. Peeker Kennedy. And he was a nice teacher with red hair.
Peeker.
And he knew his science. Now, going back to the high school, on the north side, you see, on the northeast was the seventh grade, and on the northwest was the eighth grade. When I was in the eighth grade, I was taking Latin, and the room was too full for Miss Elizabeth Grant, not Elizabeth, it's Margaret Grant. And so Maud Grant was hired to teach us that took Latin, and we would be in the recitation room that was across the front of in the front corner of the building at the northwest corner of the building was a recitation room with a door near the north end of the large room to get into it. And there were long benches there on which we sat. The benches weren't fastened down, and somebody in the second row would would push the bench, that bench up and against the, your knees against the bunch, and then the next row would push it up against, and they'd all bunch it, and they'd have a hard time of it. A lot of confusion a good many times. And I can still remember Maud Grant's blue dress with the ribbon bows on each side up near the top. She wore the same dress the entire winter.
Were there two Latin teachers by the same name then?
Mm-hmm.
Were there two?
This isn't Latin teacher. Maud Grant.
Oh, Maud.
Taught the Latin that year, but the other teacher was the eighth grade teacher that where we were. We were in the eighth grade, but we were taking Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us were. Those that were going to take the classical course were taking Latin, which is in the eighth grade. The others that were taking any other course were not taking Latin. And so, with such a large grade, they decided that those that were taking Latin should be put in the recitation room and have another teacher. And that was Maud Grant's first year of teaching, and she was so discouraged that she didn't try it again for a long time.
It wasn't fair, was it?
No, it wasn't fair.
Teaching Latin to big classes at that.
But she didn't have a big class. She had a small class.
In the recitation room.
In the recitation room. But it was... Our class had Jane Harrington and Lee Rauch and Bert Knapp and some of these that afterwards got to be presidents of companies and presidents of banks and so on in Monroe. But they had their fun when they were in school, and our class was called the worst class that ever went through the school up to that date.
The paper didn't mention that.
It didn't mention
No.
Well, a lot of people did mention it.
So there were quite a few in your class who went on to school, is that right?
Oh yes, there were. You know, Dr. Newcomb of Ida was in the class too. He was a fine man. And people say what a wonderful doctor he was.
What were your assembly programs every day usually put on by the students then, weren't they?
The morning assembly?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was put on by the students.
And then you had...
I don't mean the students. But the students were told what they had to do.
I said, they had to recite in some way or other. Is that
yes.
Right? Did you ever have speakers for assembly?
Long speakers?
Like they did, say 30 years later, you know, they bring in a special person to speak.
No.
And then did you have closing exercises at the end of the day?
No.
No. And let's see what happened. I just hope this is recording.
I can't, yes.
Hope we are anyway. Do you remember, what do you remember about the basketball team I understand you had? The first girls basketball team from Monroe High School.
Have you got a picture of it?
No, I have a picture of 1920 was in the newspaper. 1920 basketball team, not your team.
Well, I gave them the picture.
Well, the newspaper in 1963 for the centennial ran a picture of the 1920 girls
yes.
team.
I noticed that. They mentioned
your names.
They
listed.
Mentioned the first one, but they put the picture in on the 20th.
Yes.
They didn't put our picture in, they put a different one in, don't you see?
But you did have one of your team back then.
We had a team in, let's see now, I'll find the date. 1896, and we, year 1896, 97. The teacher in Latin was Cornelia Wilding. And she liked sports, and so she started this basketball team. Someone in Dundee started the same idea in Dundee the same year. And so in the spring, late, we had a field day on the fairgrounds. The fairgrounds is where the Hollywood Drive and along in through there is now. And we were over there to the fairgrounds, and Dundee team and our team played, and Monroe won the game. And that was the first basketball game in Monroe, first basketball team in Monroe. And I have a picture showing part of the, showing us sitting on the grass, eating our lunch, and showing the big fat superintendent with a shot put in his hand, showing how to do that, and shows part of the grandstand with a couple of the girls standing on the platform or on the, along the steps or somewhere along there. And I gave that picture to the Historical Society, I believe.
I wonder if these pictures were labeled. Do you remember?
Yes, they were labeled.
They were labeled. So if I find them, I'll know. So many of the pictures down there are not labeled in any place. I find people haven't put things down, and then you just see a picture and you don't know. But do you remember the outfits you wore as a basketball team, or did you?
Yes, I remember the outfit. My mother made me a blue waist with a great big collar, a sailor collar, and I had long sleeves, and it was baggy, and I had big bloomers and very wide that made it look like a skirt, don't you know? And we had black stockings on and our shoes, so we looked fairly presentable.
It sounds like the bathing costume of about the same period, too.
Oh, it was more than that.
More clothing to it.
More clothing to it than mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. And then, how did you get into the field of teaching? Did you go to normal school? Did you go direct from high school?
No. May I have some water?
Oh, certainly. Where do they keep it?
Over. On the bedside table.
They don't have any. May I go out in the hall and get you some?
Is there any in the cup there?
Yes, I guess there is. A little here?
Well, probably stale.
I'd be happy to get you some fresh.
All right.
Could I get you some fresh?
All right.
Oh. Oh, these are memories that people enjoy reliving. Sometimes they've forgotten.
You've got the thing turned off, haven't you?
It's on now. Would you like it off?
I'd like it off a little.
All right.
What I want to know is, do you want this
now,
or do you want
to? Yes, you said you taught it, you went directly from high school. Did you always know you wanted to teach?
Oh yes, I knew I was going to teach.
And how did you get in out at South Rockwood? How did you become, get a position out there?
Well, I'll have to, if I explain that, have you got the recorder?
Yes, it's on.
Well, I have to explain then how it happened. You see, My mother was very ill at the time I graduated. My mother came to Monroe to educate her family. I was the youngest one, and when I graduated, her mission was accomplished. She was very ill, and my brother Lee was very, very ill. He'd been in bed for many months, and so at the time of my mother's death, the doctor said we must not cry and make any noise because it might kill Lee if we did. He was that ill. You see, there were no funeral homes at that time. Mother was in the living room. They called it the parlor in those days. And my brother in the next room where the family gathered. My brother Ray and his wife, and my sister Stella and her husband, and Lee very sick, and Anna having been her first year of teaching in Monroe, and myself having just graduated. I said my graduation story to my mother before I went to the exercises.
She didn't get to your graduation then?
She was very ill, and she was gone in August. And of course, we didn't know that was going to happen. I hadn't taken any teacher's examination in the spring, as I ordinarily would have done if I had intended to teach in the fall. But if my mother had lived, there would have been the pension that she would have as a veteran's wife, so there would have been a little bit of money there, and Anna was earning a little bit of money, $30 a month, I think it was, at teaching. And we thought we could live on that if I took care of my mother and my brother and stayed at home. But when my mother died, why, Anna said I'd have to get to and earn my own way now. She couldn't support me with and Lee and herself with just that much money. So there was an examination in August, and I went to Dundee on the train and had to stay all night in a little, very small hotel there with the rope hanging out. So if there was a fire, I could climb down the rope to get out of the hotel.
Anybody home?
So you went to Dundee and stayed overnight to take the examination. How long did they take?
2 days. And so I took the examination and passed it. And of course, it was time for school to start, and all the schools were taken. But at South Rockwood, after teaching a month, the teacher got trouble with her eyes and had to leave. And so they asked me to come. So I went out on the train to South Rockwood, and John Strong, who used to be Lieutenant Governor and had a big store there in a beautiful mansion, met me and took me to the store and talked over what had to be done. And he said they could pay $20 a month. And I said that it cost me 25 cents each way to get out there, and I'd have to give $1 a week at home, and I'd have to pay my board where I was going to stay the 5 days, and I ought to have at least 22 and a half. And he said, well, if I made a success of it, I could have 22 and a half. So at the end of the first month, I went to him to get my salary, and he said, I think one person complained about the way you teach spelling, and so we're going to give you $20. I said, well, then you'll have a new teacher on Monday. He said, oh, no, we'll give you 22 and a half. So that's how I got started. Now I had to go out on the train on Sunday night, and I had to walk the railroad track for a mile till I got to the next road and went down off the road a little bit to a house near the corner where Walter Crook lived, and that's where I boarded during the week. And the Rockwood School had two rooms, and the Will Harris was the principal, and he taught all the grades starting with fifth through the ninth. And I had from the chart class up through the fourth in a recitation room. And so that's how I started. Then the end of the year, why, I wondered if I could get nearer home, and someone at Stony Creek said they wanted a school, so I applied at Stony Creek, and I taught there 2 years. Right near the station was a one-room school, and across the street from the store, and the place where the train would stop. And then I had to cross the creek there, White Creek.
And where did you go from South Rockwood now?
From South Rockwood, I went to Stony Creek.
I mean from Stony Creek.
Well, before I leave Stony Creek, I want to pay tribute to Mr. Renner that was there across the street from the schoolhouse. If a stovepipe fell down or I got in any trouble, he was right over there to help me out.
What was his name, Renner?
R-E-N-N-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
So after 2 years at Stony Creek, I went to LaSalle because they would pay a couple dollars more than I got to Stony Creek. And the reason I could get to LaSalle too very nicely on the streetcar, and could get the streetcar right there. I wanted to say before, I should have mentioned the fact that I lived at, in the beginning it was called 408 Washington Street, and later it became 814 Washington Street, and when they put the 8th Street was not put through from Monroe to the east at all, but later on it was put through from Washington Street to the east, and but not from Monroe to Washington Street. So I became a resident at 756 Washington Street, and it was all the same residence. And in November 1890, my mother and my sister Anna and my brother Lee and myself moved into that house, and that's where I lived until I came here less than 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years in October that I came here to the Lutheran Home for the Aged.
So you lived in that house almost 80 years? Approximately
79 years.
Uh-huh.
And
its address now is
756
Washington.
And at the time that it was built, might be interesting for you to know that there was just a little ditch out in front and a dirt road on Washington Street. Sidewalk was, they were the boards, narrow boards, well not too narrow, but quite narrow boards with a little crack in between. So once dropped a penny through there and had to put a stick of gum on it on the end of a stick to get it out again, because a penny was worth 25 cents about now. A penny was the most money that you hardly ever received. Well, anyway, there's a little ditch out front and the dirt road, and when it rained, there'd be water in the ditch. And as a child, I just loved to take off my shoes and stockings and feel the mud oozing through my toes, between my toes, and walk up and down in the ditch. Often when I went to school, the Union School, a snake would come out from under the board and I'd have to stop and kill it. And before I went any farther, I don't know why I thought I had to, but I always did. And so that was the way it was in those days. And the...
So your sister kept that house going then?
My sister kept the house going while I was out in the county for 5 years. You see, I went to LaSalle. Now at LaSalle, it was a building, I think it's a town hall or something like that now, but it was a school building just back of the store at the corner, the main corner in LaSalle. And I had at least 60 children present every day. And I had to teach 36 classes a day, starting with kindergarten through the eighth grade. And of course you had to combine classes. You'd have to take fifth and sixth together. Teach fifth and sixth the same thing 1 year, and then the next year teach them the other thing, you see. So that, or else you never would have get through the same day. So I didn't like it at LaSalle very well, and Anna was teaching at that time out in the county near Toledo, and when she was coming home on the streetcar, why, someone from area number 5 said to her, "Do you suppose I'd come and teach their school next year?" So Anna told me, and I went right out and applied for it and got it. I had farther to go, and I had 2 miles to walk from the streetcar to the house where I lived, and but I had fewer children, and the children were all Catholic, and I used to help them with the catechism too. And when Mr. Moran gave his first, his first mass, why, they closed the school, and I was invited to go to the meeting, to the church, and I went to the church, and I was also invited to their home to the celebration dinner, because they liked me, because I helped them with their catechism, I suppose.
They didn't have a Catholic school there.
They didn't have any Catholic school out there. And while I was there, the mother, Mrs. Travick, almost died, and they came to give the last rites to her and so on. And before, when she thought she was dying, she asked me she said, "Please take care of my 4-year-old son if I die." Well, you can imagine how I prayed that she wouldn't die. Well, she didn't, so I was released from that obligation. And one time, there was such a terrible snowstorm, and no one could get through with buggy or anything. And I started out, I know Anna would expect me home and be frightened if I didn't come. So I started out walking, and oh, it was terrible. And I nearly died out the way. I remember one place I stood still, and just thought, well, I'll just lie down right here and that'll be the end. I can't take another step. But then I thought, well, I mustn't do that. I got to go on. And finally, I got to a house where the streetcar came through. The streetcar, of course, was late because there was so much snow to be taken off the track. And the women didn't ask me in. My feet got frozen, my ears got frozen, and I had a bad time of it.
They wouldn't ask you in?
No. And so that's some of the hazards you get when you teach in the county. But there are a lot of compensations. And I still remember some of these lovely people that I had, and they remember me too.